We're opening up the phone lines with your questions from my guest, Dave Politis, and I know a lot of you have things on your mind about his new book, Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail. I have like two questions, and then I promise we'll go to the phone lines. We'll be right back with more Coast to Coast AM. David, I thought one of the strongest points about the newest book is that you allowed more of your personal opinions to get involved, to be in print. It's not that you're saying this is what it is, but you expressed frustrations in dealing with law enforcement or different agencies, and you gave some advice. You said, look, you need to, if you're interested in this, you need to, in effect, cast a wide net. You need to read things that you might not normally read and broaden your horizons and consider various possibilities, meaning this might be a multidisciplinary approach that's going to solve this thing.
Well, and I think that there's something that's key right there is we all tend to migrate towards our special entrance zone, whether that's the ghosts or it's Bigfoot or it's UFOs. But we become an expert in that little tiny area, and we don't look outside that area. And I can tell you that I have read more types of things that people have told me to read, and I've been all over the map. And I can tell you that it's opened my eyes to some things that I may not have seen if I hadn't migrated out of my comfort zone to read it. So I get people all the time saying, hey, I know exactly what this is. And most of them have never even read the book and just listened to a couple of our interviews. And I tell everybody, really, these interviews cover probably 1% of what's in the books. And to really get a grasp on this and to be as confused as I am, you need to read the books.
Yeah.
And I'm not trying, it's not to sell the books, but this is a lot more complex than most people think.
Yeah, absolutely. We're just scratching the surface, honestly. There's so, and the devil is in the details. You really need to read the details to get a handle on it. You know, an example is the work I did on the Skinwalker stuff. I mean, you know, I was a UFO guy before that, but I had to broaden my horizons a lot to look at different possibilities for that. I know in reading this book that you mentioned about your dealings with Whitley Strieber. And I know when you started this, you're not a UFO guy by any means. And I guess you could put Strieber in that category, although his interests expand far beyond that. But you learned a lot from talking to him and interchanging information with him, right?
I didn't even know that Whitley had an abduction scenario with entities within miles of one of the locations where one of my people that I wrote about disappeared. I never even knew that. And Whitley read the book and said, Dave, this is amazing, the connection you just made. I go, I didn't make any connection, Whitley. And he says, yeah, but you did it for me. And it was during the interview, and I was stunned. I mean, you've got to say that that's a solid coincidence if you believe in coincidence.
You say in the book, in this book, that the list of suspects or the list of possible explanations is narrowing. But it's still not to the point where you, as the principal investigator, can point to this and say, it's that. Or is it? Or are you just not willing to say?
So that's an interesting point. And I would say 85 to 90% of the communications I get are complimenting me because I am not walking people down a path trying to get them into my belief system. I'm allowing the reader to form their own beliefs and come to their own conclusions. Now, just lately, I've had to tell this to some people. Do you know how long it took law enforcement to catch Ted Bundy?
I don't know.
It took them years.
Yeah.
The Green River Killer killed dozens of people. It took them over a decade to figure out even to cordon down the suspects to 5 or 10. This is so much more complex. With so many other variables, dealing with other continents, this is to just ask somebody to throw something out there. I'm never going to do that. I mean, if I get something concrete where I say, okay, there's an overwhelming amount of evidence pointing to this, I'm going to come out with it for sure. But I'm not going to take any guesses because when you're dealing with the missing parents, you look like an idiot if you start guessing. And then you're later proven wrong. And I'd rather keep their respect and dignity and just keep my thoughts to myself, especially since they're all over the map at this point.
Well, all over the map puts it in a different context too. If it's all over the world, that eliminates a whole lot of possible explanations about species that might be doing it, wild animals that are not found all over the place. You can cross that sort of off the list. If you have the same exact kind of circumstances all over the world, it whittles it down. But it also broadens it in another sense,
It's
right?
true. Absolutely.
It drives you crazy. Is it still solvable?
I think it
You have
is.
to believe it.
I do. I think it is. But with every case that I find, it opens up my mind to other issues. Just in this book, I could say this is probably the greatest stride forward, because now we're dealing with airplanes, we're dealing with a disappearance in a boat. We're dealing with things that fit within that profile, but we opened up the horizons a lot.
I think you could write a book about urban disappearances. It's going to be a lot harder to filter out those cases, but I just got a feeling that there's probably some of this stuff happening in much more populated areas, but maybe that's a project for down the road. Let's go to the phones. East of the Rockies, Paul in Florida. Good morning, Paul. You're on with Dave Politis.
Yeah, good morning, George and Dave. I'm afraid I have another book that Dave might be interested in reading. Many years ago, the great Isaac Asimov wrote a short science fiction story called Eternity, in which he postulated the existence, more or less outside of time, of a government-controlled organization that went through history, changing the course of the future by selectively arranging for the demise, usually through accidents or other misadventure, of people that were going to be involved in things that this organization didn't want to happen. That's always been impractical or impossible, and even at the time Asimov wrote his book in the 50s. But now, with the existence of data mining and the tremendous databases of DNA and genealogical information and specific ID information, it is possible now for people to be individually identified, and the people in the future would be able to track them through time and determine what their impact would be on the future. So what you might have here is a government-run eternity operation coming back and selectively eliminating people. But they would only do this with people who had great potential, either intellectually or through family connections or whatever, to change the future. Have you looked at that aspect?
I can't say I've never heard of that theory, but when you look at the intellectual side of the people that are taken, yeah, you could say that some of these people for sure could change the course of history. They were brilliant. I mean, some of the physicists that have disappeared were the best of their genre. But the other end of that, you can't ignore that there's too many of these people with disabilities that have disappeared as well.
Well, you know what? If you take that theory to its logical extension, I mean, you could say some person who may not be brilliant, who may have disabilities, who steps off the path and kills a bug that wipes out a species and changes the planet, sort of the butterfly effect. I guess anybody could affect the future if you look at it that way.
True.
Paul, you've bent our brains there. That's a pretty good point. Thanks for the call. West of the Rockies, Brother Jonathan, Bakersfield, California. You're on with Dave Politis. Hi, Jonathan.
Gentlemen, how you doing?
Okay.
This is going to be a whole ironic praise report. What I'm about to tell you, and I trust you both believe on our Lord Jesus Christ does answer prayer in his time. After your show was on, David, last year, where I heard it the first time, I had prayed and I said, God, how can this happen to children and adults of all ages and just without any explanation? And I forgot I said the prayer. And then 2 weeks later, I'm walking home from the store at 2:38 in the morning. And keep in mind, I'm repented, Jesus' name baptized, Holy Ghost filled, Christian preacher, as according to Acts 2:30, the apostles of the plan of salvation. I have oil on my head in Jesus' name for protection. And guess what happened? You'll never believe it. But here it happened. A door opened up in midair like an elevator. I saw a demon step out, look left, look right. It saw that I was under God's protection, and it vanished. And I asked the Lord, and he said, 95% of these cases are the reason it happens exactly like that. They are snatched from dimensional doors. That's why they're found later in bits and pieces or barely alive to further frustrate and mock and zealously deceive their searchers.
Well, Jonathan, thanks for that input. And I guess, Dave, you can't rule out dimensional doorways or creatures or demons. You just don't have enough information to say yes or no, do you?
Well, I've heard that theory before, but then my question would be, is why does it only happen to one person at a time? Why doesn't it happen to, like, a pair of people walking down the trail and walk through that same dimensional door?
Yeah, you have very few cases where multiple people disappear, right?
Very rare.
Jonathan, thanks for the suggestion. I don't think we have enough information to give you a solid answer in one way or another, but an interesting theory. First-time caller, Nick in Thousand Oaks, California. Good morning, Nick. You're on with Dave Politis.
All right. Thank you very much, George and Dave. I mean, first off, George, I want to say, like, your investigative journalist pedigree for these types of subjects is just paramount. I mean, good Lord. We need more of that in radio and news in general. But I get to my question. It's in regards to protecting yourself in the parks. I know that Dave is a police officer. He can carry a firearm. And if you have your family with you, my question is in regards to the West, where I grew up, went to the Sierras and went to Yosemite as a kid. Can you carry your firearm with you? Is it one of those things you have to have a concealed carry? Or if you cannot, what do you suggest in regards to, protecting yourself in the parks where it's so vast and expansive?
You know, the National Park Service changed the law about carrying a gun in their park. I think it was about 5 years ago now. And what they did is they let it fall in line with the state that you were in that park. So if you got a concealed weapons permit, or if the state you were in didn't even require a concealed weapons permit to carry a gun, then you could carry a gun in their park.
I thought Yosemite said you couldn't have them. It seemed to me I remember reading that, but I don't know what California's gun laws are.
Well, that would be harsh if, a majority of those incidences occurred in Yosemite. I mean, that'd be harsh for a normal park goer. I mean, if you wanted to protect his family.
Well, I might be wrong. I don't know if Dave can maybe enlighten us.
I think it's a national policy that the Park Service said that if you have a CCW in the state that the park is in, then you can carry a gun in their park.
Maybe the GPS is a better defense.
Oh, George, can I ask one last thing?
Sure, go ahead.
If you can't carry a gun, or maybe you're not licensed to, what would David suggest instead of a firearm to protect his family?
I'd for sure be carrying a personal locator transponder, and I would be grouped up. I wouldn't be going alone.
I'd be carrying I'd have my hands in the hands of my kid if I was walking through the forest with a child. Maybe I'd tie a rope around their waist. I don't know. Is that practical?
Might as well. I mean, Oof.
Thanks, Nick. Appreciate the call. Wildcard line, Charles in Los Angeles. Good morning, Charles. You're on with Dave.
Good morning. I think I've heard all your programs, Dave, that you've been on. But I was wondering, with the survivors, that, you know, with all these problems that have happened, some people have survived. I wondered whether any of them had ever been put under hypnosis and regressed.
That's a great idea, something I would promote to do, but they have to step up and come to us and be willing to do something like that. Like I explained earlier in the program, we won't proactively go out to reach out to them.
I think, Dave, I had mentioned that to you as a suggestion as well, because hypnotic regression can retrieve hidden memories, but no one, the families, I guess, you know, a lot of these people are just crushed. They're not thinking along those lines, right?
Correct.
Charles, thanks for the suggestion. Rick in Georgia on the wildcard line. Good morning, Rick.
Hey, how are you? David, I've read your books. I've read three of them. I haven't read the fourth one, but anyway, what I was interested in is the idea that the DNA of Bigfoots that you had submitted to laboratories had come back, and they were human. They were human. So they are us, and so I would like to hear your comment about that, because they're obviously smart. You know, so anyway, I'd love to hear your comment about that because I hadn't heard anything about it in about a year or so. So anyway, let me know about that. I'll hang up. Thanks.
Thanks for the call, Rick. Dave, it's up to you if you want to delve into that.
You know, that's probably another show, huh, George?
It could be. Rick, we appreciate the call, but this probably opens up a whole different area that I don't know we have time to get into tonight. We're going to go to Paul in Denver, sort of epicenter of missing persons cases. Paul, what's on your mind?
Yeah, not too long ago, earlier on in the winter, there was a dad and his son that were pretty experienced outdoorsmen. I believe they were from Indiana, and they were going winter camping, backcountry camping, near Colorado Springs. And they were supposed to be back, and they didn't come back. The mom called. They found the car, and they started searching. And then there was a cell phone ping from the guy's cell phone. They knew which direction to start searching, and they started searching, and they ended up calling off the search a couple of times because of inclement weather. And then they basically just said, well, you know, it almost seemed like they were saying, well, when, you know, fall time comes around and the hunters are out for elk and deer, they'll find the body.
Dave, does this ring a bell?
Yeah, it was actually two people from Minnesota, a dad and his son. And, yeah, just like the caller said, there was a lot of conjecture from some people who were involved in the search that they didn't think that the people were ready for the Colorado high altitude, bad weather. And they had supposedly gone off and left their campsite. And the boy had called his girlfriend the night before, so they had some date when they had last made contact. But like you said, the search was called off, bad weather, kind of a typical scenario.
One quick question. I have a five-year-old son, and he wants to go camping this summer. Do I go camping with a five-year-old in the Rocky Mountains?
You know, I would. But I would make sure that kid was under my eye every second.
Then bring along the deer rifle just to make sure.
Something, that's for sure.
Thanks, Paul. Appreciate it. Dave, I guess you get a lot of questions like that. Do you? And I have had fast blasts here tonight. Hey, I'm going to go camping in Alaska. Is that safe? You must get that every day.
I get it all the time.
And in general, you tell people, yeah, go ahead, but just be careful.
Absolutely. You know, I know a lot, and I'm just as concerned as all of your listeners are, trust me. Sometimes the more you know, the more scared you get. But I'm not going to stop going out into the woods just because I know all this is going on. I'm going to take all the precautions I can. I'm going to travel with ease, and I'm going to make sure I'm with someone that I trust my life with. And the caller who brought up Alaska, we haven't talked about that, but there are a lot of disappearances in Alaska. It's very hard to get information out of Alaska on most of the disappearances, but some of them are very, very strange.
Well, you know, I mean, you have disappearances everywhere. You have people taken out of homes, out of cars, out of planes. Seems like if it wants to get you, it's going to get you, whatever it might be. Continue our conversation with Dave Politis in our next segment and get to as many of your calls as we can get. If you're going to go on a picnic, be careful. Much more to come here on Coast to Coast AM. We're coming right back, getting right to the phones, taking as many of your calls as we can for our guest, Dave Politis. Right back with more Coast to Coast AM. We're back with Dave Politis, whose new book, Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail, is chock full of pretty spooky stuff. David in Williamsburg, Kentucky. Good morning, David.
Howdy. I want to tell you how I appreciate what you do there, and I just had a question about, have you ever run upon a case where the person was found alive but like in a coma? Or anything like that, or reported later on having some kind of mysterious illness?
There's quite a few cases where the people are found in a semi-conscious state, and they definitely are not all there. But it's after a period of time, usually a half a day, they start to come back to normal. So I don't know if you'd call that a coma, but they are semi-conscious. As far as getting any other illness later on, not that I've heard.
Just the fever that you talked about.
Correct.
David, have you got some kind of case, something that happened?
Well, not necessarily, but I've got a friend that they got lost when they was a kid, and they was found, and they was in a coma, but it was supposedly because they hit their head on a rock. They was like, I guess, 4 or 5 years old, and he's had problems with his head the rest of his life. And I was just curious because he don't remember getting lost.
Well, I think Dave Politis has documented there are a heck of a lot of cases where they're not totally out of it, but, I mean, they are discombobulated, and they're definitely messed up, right, David?
Absolutely.
Dave, okay. Appreciate
Go ahead. That was in the Daniel Boone Forest in Kentucky here. Is there any other cases, or have you heard of any cases from that national forest?
Well, I wouldn't focus just so much on that national forest as I would on the region. And that area of Kentucky, Tennessee has had a lot of incidents.
Yeah, there's a heck of a lot of them in this new book, too. David, thank you for the call. Appreciate it. All right. In Winnipeg, Canada, Bill is on the phone. You're on with Dave Politis. What's on your mind?
I was just wondering if there's a percentage of victims, either where they disappeared or where they were found, that the bedrock underneath them was granite, ideally some sort of a crystal, like a quartz at all, possibly, because I'm going with that is the people that are taking them and dropping them off are using a technology that needs a crystallized base, like a granite base. Is there any percentages of the type of rock that where these people were found laying on?
So you have to remember that search and rescue people, they're out there to just search and find, rescue, and go home. And they're not thinking like you and I are thinking right now. They're thinking as ho-de-do, let's go find the people, let's get them home, let's get out of here. They're not thinking anything criminal. They're not thinking anything abduction-oriented. So to find that information in any report would be almost impossible.
But you do have a heck of a lot of granite connections, don't you?
Granite and boulders, absolutely.
Yeah, so Bill, you're right. I don't know if you can give it a percentage, but there's a heck of a lot of cases where granite and boulders are involved. So you might be onto something there. Thanks for the call. International line, Robert in Vancouver, BC. Hi, Robert.
Hi, thanks very much for having me on.
Sure.
I'm not sure if you followed in British Columbia. It's a very politically charged subject. But it started with Indigenous women disappearing in a certain area of Vancouver. And that is built over the last couple of years with information coming out that a large number of women have disappeared on a highway, which is deemed the Highway of Tears between Prince George and Prince Rupert.
David knows it very well. I can just tell you, Dave Politis knows it very well. Dave?
Lately, they've announced that the RCMP have announced that there's an estimated 1,200 women in the last 20 years that have disappeared throughout Vancouver. And I'm wondering, you know, a broad-based question, any dealings with Indigenous people or more curious, any indication, have you ever had any indication or maybe you know, rumor or you're in your own gut, have any feeling that the numbers may be much larger than anyone has ever imagined? I'll take my answer. I'll listen to you offline. Off
good phone. Questions, Robert. Thank you.
So the title of my first book was Missing 411, and that was a play on words just like this book is. So Missing 411, it's missing information because we don't have the information to solve it. And there were 411 cases in those first two books. Now we're up over 1,200. So it wouldn't be prudent to think that there weren't many more of these cases over time. And the further back you go back in history, the harder it is to get credible information and identifiable information that would put it within the profile we're looking at. It gets really hard.
Now, there's a lot going on in British Columbia right now. There's the Highway of Tears case. There's supposedly a serial killer in Vancouver. And there's a series of feet that have washed up on the shores of British Columbia and the Western U.S. And they're not sure. I know British Columbia hasn't been able to identify the vast majority of those feet or what's going on. I think the Highway of Tears case, they got a task force working that case. And the last I heard is they had a couple of pretty good suspects on that. Now, the mass disappearance, I haven't heard that. So would I believe it? I probably would, because there's a lot of strange things that go on in British Columbia.
The other part of his question, Dave, was about Native Americans. You've dealt with indigenous tribes a lot when you started out years ago working on Bigfoot-type mysteries. Have you ever asked them about this? Have you had a chance to get input about this?
And there are a lot of missing people in reservations. The problem is that they have a lot of issues in those reservations that maybe aren't talked about too much outside. Drug and alcohol problems are huge. And there isn't a real good health standard on a lot of these places. And maybe there isn't as good of law enforcement connection and reporting as there should be. So because of that, there's a lot of people that they just don't keep a close account of. So it's really hard to say which one of those people fit the profile and did disappear, and which fit the drug and alcohol profile and they just drop out of society or live on the streets.
I know that's sensitive. You don't want to insult somebody who's a friend of yours or people that you've dealt with, but I wonder if there are knowledgeable folks, shaman, who might have some input on something like this that you could talk to.
Well, I think there are. In fact, you had a woman on your show a while back that wrote a book about Native Americans and their connection to the Star People.
Yeah.
And they talk about that if they get your trust and if they have your trust. And it's those kind of connections that can lead you into conversations about missing people and things. And I did have those conversations in Hoopa when I was there and with Harvey Pratt in parts of Oklahoma. But it's a stretch right now to try to get out there and to ask those questions of those people when we're looking at mass humanity that's having this problem as it is.
Right. Okay. Thanks, Robert. Appreciate it. East of the Rockies, Al in Pittsburgh. Good morning, Al.
George, good morning, Dave. In fact, you just touched on something. I was just going to bring about the Star People. But I also had in mind what I would call dimensions, portals, gateways, which the government has knowledge of, which I believe would be the reason why these people have been missing. And what I had in mind to ask you, if you know if any of them had loss of time, because I know these gateways, they're brief, which they bring, in fact, they're bringing out creatures that they, like Bigfoot, and they usually disappear right back into these dimensions. Would you happen to know if any of these people that are alive had loss of time?
Many of them do, in that they can't remember many of the days that they were gone, and they can't remember how they disappeared, and they can't remember how they were found.
Anything like, as in the UFO cases, where their watches are screwed up, or they think it's 2 o'clock and it's really 7 o'clock at night, or something like that.
Never heard that. No.
Al, anything else?
That they're, I would believe they're jumping in a different dimension, maybe deliberately or accidentally, but they're jumping in a brief dimension and then they let out later.
Well, I mean, maybe. I don't think David is closing the door on anything. Thank you, Al. Appreciate it. West of the Rockies, Charles, right here in Las Vegas. Hi, Charles. What's on your mind?
Hey, George. Hi. You were talking about a lot of people disappearing around boulders and in boulder fields. And in Iceland, they have a fairy faith, and this was uniform across Europe, that elves live in boulders, and if you offend them, they'll kill you, or you'll disappear, and they take it so seriously that the government of Iceland, they'll build their roads and their highways around boulders. They won't touch boulder fields, and they actually give boulders addresses like houses. And they take it extremely seriously about you can't touch a boulder field in Iceland, and it's uniform across Europe, this belief about elves living in boulders and how they can make you disappear.
I actually wrote about that in my North America Missing 411 book, and there's a YouTube about 35 minutes long that's fascinating that talks about exactly that.
Yeah, I mean, they do take it seriously. You can't cross it off the list. I mean, these legends come from somewhere. It's why in this book, Dave, you talk about, hey, if you are interested in this, you might need to read some mythology.
Correct.
And that includes fairies, goblins, gnomes, all that stuff.
Yep.
Thank you, Charles. Appreciate it. First-time caller Thomas in Knoxville, Tennessee. Good morning, Thomas.
Good morning, George. Hello, Dave. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a quick statement and a question.
Okay.
I live in Knoxville, so I'm right outside the Smoky Mountains. At the least once a year, I'll go up to the mountains and I hike on a night of a new moon for the sole purpose of a spiritual walk. And I always hike up to the top of the mountain, and I usually start around 11 o'clock at night so that it's during the night. It's totally dark because it's a new moon. And I'll always go up to the top of the mountain and sit on top of a rock all night long and watch the sunrise. One of these nights, I was up there, and my flashlight, like, it absolutely refused to work. And it was pitch black, dark, 40-mile-an-hour winds all night long. But I heard a scream in the background, and it was like this really thunderous scream, like a monster scream. But it had like a feminine tone to it, like a woman screaming, but it wasn't, I didn't feel like it was any kind of a human. Okay, so I just thought I wanted to throw that out there. And second, my question is, the rock I always sit on is on this big, huge rock face, like a big, giant rock outcropping, and I just sit and meditate there. And I'm curious what your... what is your opinion of what part granite plays in this? Because I'm just, for my own, I'm kind of nervous about doing this now that I've been hearing your show. You know, I love your shows, but I'm just kind of curious what your opinion on what part granite plays in all of this. And I'll be happy to take my answer off the air. Thank you for your time.
Thanks a lot, Thomas.
So first of all, I would tell Thomas that that area of the Great Smoky Mountains in and around the park has a long history of disappearances. So going out alone and sitting there on the mountaintop, I would not recommend that under any conditions. But granted, for some reason, people disappear when they're in it, and it's an unexplained disappearance because there's no place to go. And this has happened time after time. In my first book, I wrote about Mount Shasta and a climber that disappeared between a point he left his friends and 400 yards away he was supposed to meet a ranger. He disappeared, and Grizz Adams was the California State Search and Rescue Coordinator on that. And he told me, Dave, there's only one or two things that happened to him. He either went up or he went in because he's not on.
Oh. Good stuff, Thomas. Try to get one more call in. Our wild card line, David in San Antonio. Hi, David.
Yes, hi. My comment is this. I'm a ranching family and spent a lot of time at a particular mountain ranch in the mountains of far western Texas, and learned a lot about mountain lions. And, you know, I wonder if that may explain some of these cases, particularly the ones involving children, because I've watched mountain lions, the way they react around small kids, and they go into this stalking mode like they're, you know, hunting. And I think sometimes they confuse the small child with a small deer, and particularly if the kid runs, they go into this, you know, their typical predator mode. And I just wonder, because they have a way of hunting where they'll grab a windpipe or over the mouth and nose and suffocating, and that would make it impossible to scream. And I just wonder if that might explain some of these cases.
You got to remember something, that in almost all of these cases, the search and rescue people are trained to observe these kind of things. If there's trackers, the trackers they bring in look for this kind of stuff. And if the child was taken by a mountain lion, why couldn't the canines that were brought in track that child's scent still?
Yeah, if a mountain lion kills a kid, I mean, there's blood, there's shreds of clothing, there's a trail to follow, right? I think David in San Antonio, Dave sort of has a filtering system that takes those cases out of the database. But thank you for that call. Dave, do you want people to send you cases? I imagine you get cases all day long, but do you want them to send you newspaper clips? What can the public do to help you?
You know, really is to listen to what we explained tonight about the profile. If there's a case that fits that profile, we don't care where it is. Yeah, we want to hear about it. We don't want to hear about just missing people or somebody who just disappears in a forest. A lot of people who disappear, they want to disappear. And we don't want to hear about those cases. But if it fits the specific profile we're looking for, feed it our way, and there's a link on our website.
Are you making headway, you know, getting the word out to the people who need to hear this?
You know, in some ways, I think yes, but in other ways, I think no, because last year, there were more people missing that fit our profile than any other year for the last 50 years.
Well, I mean, you can't necessarily stop the abductions or the disappearances, but you can hopefully explain them at some point.
You'd hope so.
David, it's always great to have you, man. Best of luck with the book. It's the best so far, and that's saying a lot.
I appreciate it very much, George, and you're a great guy, and I appreciate your professionalism.
Best of luck to you. And Missing 411, The Devil's in the Detail, we urge people to check this out. And come on, National Park Service, give it up. Let's see the files. And if you're not keeping a list of missing persons, start keeping that list. You know, at least give some kind of peace of mind to the families of the people who are missing. My thanks to Dave Politis, of course, Nathan Staton, Gina Salvati, Lex Lonehood, Dan Galandi, Chris Moros. I'll be back next weekend, both Saturday and Sunday nights. Hope you can tune in then. Good night, everyone.